Please keep your Bibles open to Genesis 27. Holland, thanks for reading those first four verses to us. And we're going to be reading pretty much the rest of that chapter during our lesson time here this morning. Didn't mention at the beginning, but wanted to make note. Be sure and remember Joe and Vicki in your prayers over these next few days. They're in Jonesboro, Arkansas, where Joe is actually speaking at a congregation there, a planted congregation that's looking to plant again, and he is doing a church planting seminar for them over the next 4 days, beginning today and going through Tuesday. So keep him in your prayers this week. A writing in Chicken Soup for the Soul by Ted Kruger, he wrote the following. He said, "I have many memories about my father and about growing up with him in our apartment next to the elevated train tracks. For years we listened to the roar of the train as it passed by. Late at night my father waited alone for the train that took him to a factory where he worked the night shift. On this particular night I waited with him in the dark to say goodbye. His face was grim. His youngest son had been drafted. I would be sworn in at 6 the next morning while he was at the factory. My father didn't want to take his child, only 19 years old, to fight a war in Europe. He placed his hands on my shoulder and said, 'You be careful, and if you need anything, write to me and I'll see that you get it.' Suddenly, he heard the roar of the approaching train. He held me tightly in his arms and gently kissed me on the cheek. With tear-filled eyes, he murmured, 'I love you, my son.' The train arrived, the doors closed him inside, and he disappeared into the night, and I left for boot camp. 1 month later, at age 46, my father died. I am 76, and as I sit and write this, I once heard Pete Hamill, the New York reporter, say that memories are man's greatest inheritance, and I have to agree. I've lived through four invasions in World War II. I've had a life full of all kinds of experiences. But the only memory that lingers is the night my dad said, 'I love you, my son.' Oh, the incredible power of a father's blessing. Who can fathom the power of a parent's blessing? A wonderful, empowering inheritance indeed. Yet it's so easy to fail to pass on this much-needed blessing to our children." You know, our text this morning shows a blessing that is being passed on. And in your class time, you're going to be looking at both chapters 26 and 27. And we're going to specifically look at this story here in chapter 27, one that is familiar, one that we've read from an early childhood, one that has been shared with us many, many times before. But I think if we look at this and are honest with ourselves, we would have to say that as parents, we're not good at bestowing blessings on our children. And I'm going to be talking more to fathers today because this text sort of lends itself in that direction, with, of course, Isaac passing on that blessing. And we're just not good at that. We generally don't even hear the word "bless you" or the phrase, unless someone hears you sneeze, and then they might say "Gesundheit," or they might say "God bless you" or "bless you." You know, that practice of saying "God bless you" after someone sneezes, it dates back at least to 77 A.D. It's far older than some of the specific explanations that we might read. But at the time, sneezing was thought to be an early symptom of the plague, and "God bless you" became a common effort to halt the disease. Some have even offered an explanation suggesting that people once held the folk belief that a person's soul could be thrown from their body when they sneezed. And that would open the invasion or the evil spirits, the devil, to enter in. So someone would follow that up with a "God bless you." But I want to take that a step further this morning. How are we at blessing others? How are we at blessing others, and specifically our family, our children? You may be sitting here and saying, "Well, I'm well past that. I'm well beyond that age. My children have grown. They're on their own. They have children of their own." Yet I think when we read this story, we sometimes forget that Jacob was 40 years old when Isaac blessed him. That can start at any age. You know, we may say, well, fatherhood has changed over the years, or parenthood has. And maybe it has to a certain extent. I heard about a father being asked who was in charge at his home, and his answer was, well, my wife bosses the children, my children boss the dog and cat, and I can say anything I want to the goldfish. You know, does that describe the family today? Maybe so. Maybe so to a certain degree. But I don't think God expects any less of parents today than He did thousands of years ago at the time that Isaac is blessing his son. So this morning I'd like for us to look at this 27th chapter of Genesis, the story of Isaac bestowing this blessing on Jacob. Of course, as you remember, Isaac and Rebekah had twin sons, Esau and Jacob, who were not anything alike. Esau was an outdoorsman. He had the hairy arms and hands. He loved hunting and fishing. Jacob was more of a homebody, and he spent a lot of time close to home and with his mother. Now, we need to remember a Jewish father's blessing was a formal delegation of a father's leadership and authority to his oldest son. And since the oldest son was assuming the leadership and responsibilities of the family, he also received a double share of his father's possessions. So the bestowing of the blessing was a very important thing indeed. And we see that taking place. And as we read this story, you can see what an important thing that it was in the lives of this family. Holland read the first four verses. I'd like to go ahead and start there at verse 5 and read just most of the chapter here to kind of set the tone for today's lesson. So let's begin there at verse 5. Now Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. When Esau left for the open country to hunt game and bring it back, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, 'Bring me some game and prepare me some tasty food to eat, so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die.' Now, my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out to the flock and bring me two choice young goats so I can prepare some tasty food for your father, just the way he likes it. Then take it to your father to eat so that he may give you his blessing before he dies." Jacob said to Rebekah his mother, "But my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I'm a man with smooth skin. What if my father touches me? I would appear to be tricking him and would bring down a curse on myself rather than a blessing." His mother said to him, "My son, let the curse fall on me. Just do what I say. Go and get them for me." So he went and got them and brought them to his mother, and she prepared some tasty food just the way his father liked it. Then Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her older son, which she had in the house, and put them on her younger son Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then she handed to her son Jacob the tasty food and the bread she had made. He went to his father and said, "My father." "Yes, my son," he answered. "Who is it?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of the game so that you may give me your blessing." Isaac asked his son, "How did you find it so quickly, my son?" "The Lord your God gave me success," he replied. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not." Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he blessed him. "Are you really my son Esau?" he asked. "I am," he replied. Then he said, "My son, bring me some of your game to eat so that I may give you my blessing." Jacob brought it to him and he ate, and he brought some wine and he drank. Then the father Isaac said to him, "Come here, my son, and kiss me." So he went to him and kissed him. When Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he blessed him and said, "Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed. After Isaac finished blessing him and Jacob had securely left his father's presence, his brother Esau came in from hunting. He too had prepared some tasty food and brought it up to the father. Then he said to him, "My father, sit up and eat some of my game so you may give me your blessing." His father Isaac asked him, "Who are you?" "I am your son," he answered, "your firstborn, Esau." Isaac trembled violently and said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it just before you came and I blessed him, and indeed he will be blessed." When Esau heard his father's words, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, me too, my father." Kind of an extensive reading there, but I wanted to get the story in so we could set the tone. Do you see what's happening here? A lot of different things going on. We could have this lesson and go a lot of different directions this morning. But what I would like to do this morning is look at the importance of the blessing. And I think we see that. We can see how important this blessing was viewed by those children. As I said in the onset, a bit different than what we would think of today. But let's think and put this in today's world, in today's society. I used a book to help me in this lesson today, written by Gary Smalley. And it's simply entitled The Blessing. Some of you may have read this or read parts of it. And the beginning of that says, "No matter your age, the approval of your parents affects how you view yourself and your ability to pass that approval along to your children, spouse, and friends. Many people spend a lifetime looking for this acceptance the Bible calls the blessing." In this book, Dr. Smalley says there's really four ingredients that are found within this blessing. And I think if we break them down and look at them, we can say, okay, those can be a part of our home today. Those can be a part of the way that I can bless someone today, and specifically a child, specifically my child. Those four ingredients, when practiced consistently, can help children grow up with a solid, secure confidence of themselves and able to go out into the world and function normally. But if those ingredients are absent in the home, then too often the child ends up like Esau, steeped in bitterness and anger. We could read on in the story, read on in that chapter, and Esau had a plot to kill his brother. He was bitter that Jacob had received that blessing and he didn't. And that bitterness caused anger. And he wanted to even kill his brother. And you'll look at that in your class time this morning. But I'd like to look at these four ingredients in the time that we have left this morning. The first ingredient was a meaningful touch. Notice verse 22, Jacob went close to his father who touched him. And then verse 26, then his father Isaac said to him, "Come here, my son, and kiss me." You know, this is not an isolated incident in Scripture. Almost every time a blessing is bestowed in Hebrew culture, it involves the touching or the laying on of hands, a kiss, an embrace, something that conveys acceptance and love. We could go to the 10th chapter of the Gospel of Mark, where people brought children to Jesus so that He could touch them. Jesus took them, He placed them on His knee, and laid His hands on them, and the Scripture says He blessed them. The meaningful touch. It's important that we do this in our homes as well. When children are very small, you can't communicate with them with words because they don't understand the words yet. But the best way to communicate to a very small child is through what? The touch. They can feel that love. They can feel that security. They can feel that meaning in their life. Jacob, as we mentioned, was 40 years old when Isaac touched and kissed him to convey his blessing. But no matter your age, that personal contact, whatever it might be, that hug, that kiss, that embrace, even that handshake is such an important ingredient and a meaningful part. A second ingredient, I think that we can see in all this, was a spoken message of affection and love. Notice there in verse 27, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field. And we got to figure that today's child might not take that as a compliment. Might not take that as a compliment thinking, what's he talking about? But to the old outdoorsman like Isaac, he thought that speaking to Esau, the smell of a field about ready for harvest, was a great smell. It was a compliment. It was a positive message that communicated love to his son. It was a connection that a father and a son had. And Esau would have known exactly that connection through those words. Of course, he was talking to Jacob in all of this. But see, too often parents are quick to criticize. Parents are quick to condemn. Parents are quick to dwell on the negative and not the positive. You may have caught yourself doing this with the child from time to time. I think there's room for constructive criticism, but it's more important to communicate love through the words that we say. You're worth something. I'm glad that God gave you to me or to us to be a part of our family. You're the best present we could ever receive. Those positive words, those words of encouragement, those words of love. And we see that ingredient here in this blessing that we read of in chapter 27. Jane Bloomstein wrote a book entitled The Parent's Little Book of Lists. And in that she listed 22 of the worst things that an adult ever said to a child. And these were things that had actually been said. Some of those on that list included, "You'll never amount to anything. I wish I'd never had you. How could you be so stupid? You're useless or hopeless. I can't stand you. You'll never be college material. You'll never be any good at that. You can't be more, or why can't you be more like your brother or sister?" Or some might even say, "You're fat and ugly." So she also included in that, right beside that list, the best things that could be said. And these were ones that have been said as well. "I love you. How are you? You're a good person. You can do anything you choose to. I'm so glad that you're mine. You are very special. When you make up your mind to do something, you always follow through. You're number one. Congratulations. You deserve this. You're beautiful. You're more responsible than a lot of adults I know. I believe in you. You'll go far. I'll never have to worry about you." Which list do we find ourselves sometimes taking from? Life sets in. Things begin to snowball. We sometimes say things that we don't mean or might later regret. Yet we need to bless our children. We need to bless those that are in our family. The third ingredient that I think that we see from this story this morning was assuring them of their value. We see that in verse 28. "May God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness and abundance of grain and new wine." In essence, he's saying you're special, so God will give you the best He has to give. And it's especially important for us to teach our children that same concept. You are special. God's going to bless you. You're valuable. You're like no one else. But it's not just by words. We teach our children in a number of ways. Do we show them how important they are? Or do we sometimes let our attention go other places? If we're busy working on that project, or if we're busy reading that book or watching that television program and they come in to talk and we shut them out, what are we saying? What are we showing? You remember a couple of weeks back we were able to listen to Joel Singleton, the topic of imparting faith. What a great way to lay out some fundamental things that we can be doing. We're going to focus on that in this coming year. Be prayerful for that. But you know, one of the things that Joel did that night was a question and answer time after our evening service. Some of you were there. If you weren't, you missed some great discussion. But one of the things that he talked about in that were those red light moments and those green light moments. And so often those red light moments are when that child does not want to talk, not ready to talk, and we force that issue. And it usually comes just kind of like this. But he said, look for those green light moments when that child opens up. He said, it'll probably come at the most inopportune time when you are busy doing something. But if you'll pay attention, if you'll give the child the time he needs or she needs, that communication can be so valuable. Are we communicating value? You're worth something. You're important, more important to me than anything that I might be doing. And then the fourth ingredient, and I think this is one when we're blessing our child, was the picturing of a glorious future. We see that in verse 29 where he says, "May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed." Isaac is helping him to raise his sights and see that his future is bright. I think that's an important responsibility of parents. Proverbs 22 and verse 6, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it." You know, we've always made the spiritual application there. Teach them the things of God, and when they're old, they will not forsake them. And our responsibility as parents is to help them see themselves for who they really are and help them prepare for the glorious future, not only as parents, but as grandparents. Joel so plainly pointed that out. He said, this message of imparting faith, and that's what we're talking about here, the idea of blessing, imparting our faith to our family, runs deep. A parent, a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle. Maybe someone that looks to you as a mentor. We're to help our children find their niche, discover who they are and why they've been made. God made them special. So as they're growing up, help them understand those gifts. Understand their talents. Understand the kind of person that God wants them to be. And that time passes so soon. You may be saying, well, you're standing there telling me something you have no idea about. You still have children in your home. And that's true. Jackson's not nearly as small as he was when we first started here. Time does march on. We have one that'll be married in about 6 weeks. Doesn't seem possible, but time marches on. There was a book written by John Dresser. He entitled it, "If I Could Do It All Again." And he shared some things that he would do all over again. And you probably have your own list. Some of the things that he says, "I would laugh more. I would relax and enjoy my children and laugh at their antics. I would present a more realistic model for them to follow." He says, "I would listen to what they say." Here was one I thought was interesting. He said, "I would stop praying so much for my family and start praying for myself," speaking for him as a father, "because a father's prayers so often sound something like this: God, make me my son and daughter, God, make my son and daughter good people. Help them to succeed in school. Help them to find the right person to marry. Take care of them and protect them." We're always praying for them, it seems, but I would start praying more for myself that I might be the right kind of father, realizing that when I become the right kind of father, my children will probably be the right kind of children. He said, "I'd pay more attention to little things. I'd create an environment of belonging. I'd make God an intimate friend of my family." You know, I think the mortar that holds a family together is that meaningful touch, that spoken message, that assurance of their value, and that picturing of a glorious future for our children. Chapter 27 here of Genesis pointing that out, how important blessings are. The blessing of a father. You know, this morning God is the perfect parent who conveyed to us all the ingredients of His blessing in just one verse. "For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. Whosoever believes in Him shall not perish, but have everlasting life." How important are fathers? I want to talk to fathers as we close this morning. And let me close with an example that Dr. James Dobson shared in one of his newsletters. He said, some years ago, executives of a greeting card company decided to do something special for Mother's Day. They set up a table in the federal prison inviting any inmate who desired to send a free card to his mother. The lines were so long that another trip to the factory to get more cards was necessary. Due to the success of the event, they decided to do the same thing on Father's Day. But this time, no one came. Not one prisoner felt the need to send a card to his dad. Many had no idea who their fathers even were. What a sobering illustration of the importance of a dad and his blessing to his children. The blessing. Not a big deal. In the essence of it's easy to do. We can bless in so many small ways. A huge deal in the essence of it must be done. We see an example of that here in this reading this morning. Dobson even continued on by saying, contrast that story with a conversation I had with a man named Bill Houghton, who was the president of a large construction firm. Through the years, he had hired and managed thousands of employees. And I asked him, when you're thinking of hiring an employee, especially a man, what do you look for? And his answer sort of surprised me. He said, I look primarily at the relationship between the man and his father. If he felt loved by his dad and respected his authority, he's likely to be a good employee. Then he added, I won't hire a young man who has been in rebellion against his dad. He will have difficulty with me too. Dr. Dobson concluded then by saying, I've observed that the relationship between a boy and his father sets the tone for so much that is to come. He is that important at home. Dads, make it a point to bless your children every day. Look for ways to express your love and acceptance and value and worth. It's never too late to start, no matter the age of your child. And I think that's the message that we need to realize this morning. It's never too late to start. But it needs to be done. We must be a blessing. Impart that blessing. Imparting faith. I think so many were able to relate to what Joel had to say 2 weeks ago. I've heard good comments. I've heard positive comments. And this lesson this morning sort of being a follow-up, and we're going to touch on this time and time again in the years to come. Ways that we can impart our faith and bless our children. This morning, God's invitation is open. We have a loving Father who's reaching down to us, speaking to us, telling us how valuable we are, and helping us see what a glorious future we can have in Him. Isn't that the ingredients that we just looked at? The important ingredients? So often, we sometimes will hear a sermon or a message and go away discouraged. Don't go away discouraged this morning. Because no matter where you're at in life as a parent, you can do more. You can do better. You can take those steps that you know you need to take to bless your children. We have a Father who loves us. A Father who is reaching down this morning, asking for us to follow Him. You may be following this morning. I don't know your situation exactly. Or you may need the prayers of this body of believers here this morning. What a wonderful opportunity to come forward and let one of our shepherds pray for you. Maybe you haven't yet put on Christ through baptism, would like to take that step. You have opportunity this morning. If you're subject to the invitation, won't you come as we stand and sing?